Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America. You'll find us online at thisweekinamerica.us. Thank you for joining us on the program today. Author, businessman, former Marine John Henry Hardy has written a charming sports story that shows the power of faith and friendship in the face of any obstacle. The book is The Day God Played Baseball, and in it he captures the spirit of good sportsmanship and fair play in a hilarious, heartwarming tale. A fictional account of a small-town bully who wants to dominate the county's Little League title even if he has to cheat to do it. The excitement of a kid's championship, true love derailed, and a serious adult rivalry that threatens an entire community. Talented author John Henry Hardy is a masterful storyteller, a 33-year veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps, a B.A. in psychology, master's in business administration, awarded the George Washington Honor Medal by the Freedoms Foundation at Valley Forge, a retired AT&T territorial manager, the author of Whisper in My Ear, The Place Where the Giant Fell, Where Brothers Meet, and The Legend's Phantom Effect, and the program today talking about the book The Day God Played Baseball. Back with us on the show, one of our favorites, John Henry Hardy. John, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here and a privilege to, always is, and looking forward to it each and every time we get on the air.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you with us, and you keep writing the books, and we'll keep talking about them. We've had John on talking about Whisper in My Ear, The Place Where the Giant Fell, When Brothers Meet. Today we're talking about The Day God Played Baseball. Those videos you'll find at our website, thisweekinamerica.us, the videos tab, and you'll find them on YouTube at the This Week in America channel. This book is different, and I love this book. The book is The Day God Played Baseball. Let's go back and talk about where the idea for this book came from. Sort of personal, I understand, with your girls when they were playing Little League Baseball.
Yes, that's how the whole thing started. Years ago, when my children were younger, Wendy and Michelle were very athletic, and they loved to play baseball, as did their mother. And so there was an article in the newspaper saying, hey, we're going to have tryouts for the Little League in Bucks County. And so I took the kids down on a Saturday morning, and I let them try out for the team. Problem was, back in those days, there wasn't any girls on any of the baseball teams in the league. In fact, as you know, years ago, the girls weren't allowed to do a lot of things that the girls today take for granted.
Yep,
it's a very positive change.
Whole different time.
So we get down. Yep, and totally different times. We get down to the ball field, and the boys are there, and it was a time of the year, an era of when boys were growing their hair longer. So one of my two girls, of course, being girls, their hair was down to the shoulders like everybody else. And the coach, it was a new team, didn't know anybody on the team. And he just would point at somebody and say, hey, you go out there and pitch. Hey, you go out there and play first base. And so they were playing baseball, so my kids were doing pretty good. And they were hitting pretty good and catching pretty good. And so at the end, when the practice session was over, I called my two girls over. I said, hey, Michelle and Wendy, I'm over here. And the coach looked at me, and he came over and he said to me, are those two girls? I said, yeah, coach, they're girls. He said, they're playing as well or better than some of the boys. I said, yeah, they're rather athletic. And so that's how the whole thing started. And I got acquainted with the coach, and we played some games. Unfortunately, their career in baseball was limited there because of the fact that one of my daughters, Kristen, had some pulmonary problems, and we had to move out of Pennsylvania, where this book takes place.
Right.
And we had to move to a drier climate. And thank God, we were out here for about 2 weeks, and her fever went away. And she's been lucky with her pulmonary problems ever since. Still has a few problems, but not very many, like we had back into a time where the air was very moist back there.
Yes.
And so 37 years later, I'm sitting at the computer, and I'm starting to think about this. And I said, you know, it was somewhat of a miracle that they made the team, because they didn't let girls play on the team, but this coach did. And so I was very proud of them, of course, and I was very thankful for the coach the way that he was. And so I was sitting there on my computer thinking, you know, it was a kind of a day of miracles that they got on the team, being girls. And then a thought popped in my head that said, It must have been the day God played baseball. And that's how I came up with this theory and this story.
And it's a great story. We're talking about the book, The Day God Played Baseball. John Henry Hardy is the author, our guest on the program. His website is jhhardy.com. Book's available, of course, at Amazon, the usual places. You can get all the information and order the book, not only this, but all of John's books at his website, jhhardy.com. Click on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Let's talk about the Cherokees and the Creeks. Anybody who's ever had kids know how the excitement, especially in a smaller town, when you've got the Little League going, end of the season, you've got the championship. Talk about these two teams, because to say they were rivals is probably underselling it. They really didn't like each other, did they? And the coaches didn't like each other.
No, the coaches, in fact, were kind of, in the beginning of the book, bitter enemies.
Yes.
Alex Sierdinski, who was the coach of the Cherokees, had two loves in life. He loved baseball, and he loved Candy Hollis. Alex was a loan officer for the bank in Pineville, Pennsylvania. And Candy Hollis was one of the tellers that worked there with him. And they were almost engaged. They were talking about getting married. And one day, the town bully, whose name was Conrad Bemis, came into the bank, and he wanted the loan. Conrad owned the only small factory in Pineville. He was the richest man in the city, in the town, the burg, actually. But he was kind of a bully because he was used to getting his own way. And he was on the town council. He was on the baseball commission and the school board. And so he was a big figure in town, but he was a bully. And so the factory that he owned made burlap bags, which were and also cotton bags, which were extensively used by farmers in the area and across the country for cattle feed and for pet feed.
Right.
And so he was doing a pretty good business. Problem with Conrad Bemis was not only was he kind of an egotist, but he was also a spendthrift. He lived in a beautiful mansion. He had modern day cars, expensive cars, and he had a couple of servants to wait on him and his wife and his family. And so he was used to getting his own way, but he was running into financial problems because all of a sudden out in the market comes these new nylon bags. And cotton bags, and they can be used over and over again, much as the bags that he manufactured in his plant. But the thing about them is they were much less expensive. So he ran into some financial problems there, but he didn't stop his lavish lifestyle. He kept right on going as if everything was okay. And he was also kind of treating the girls who ran the looms in the factory as kind of second-class citizens. He made some sexual innuendos towards them at times. That, of course, back in those days, nobody challenged,
right.
which would not be happening today.
Exactly.
And so, you know, he just kept on going as if nothing was happening. Well, he's at the bank now. He needs a loan. He needs a loan to pull him out of debt. And Alex Sierdinski, the loan officer, is kind of a staid, laid-back guy, but he's a real nice guy, but he's very sharp. And he looks at some of the figures that Conrad has given him and answering some of the questions, which Conrad is kind of grimacing and making faces like he doesn't want to talk to this small town punk, but he needs him. He's only the loan officer, but he needs him to get the money. Well, Alex realizes that the Bemis Industries is in trouble, and he turns him down for the loan. Well, of course, Conrad is not used to anything like this happening. So he goes to the bank board and he goes to the president of the bank. And after listening to Conrad, they override Alex and they give him the money. Now, the money was supposed to be used for those new bags that came out on the market.
Yes.
But Alex knows he's not going to do that. He's too much in debt. And of course, he takes the money and he immediately pays his creditors off. But now he owes the bank $7 million.
Wow.
But he's angry and he's going to get even with this guy. Alex Sierdinski, who's not only his adversary in the business world now, he's his adversary on the baseball team, and both of them love baseball. That's the only thing they have in common.
And Conrad holds a grudge. Well, even a couple of years later, he sees what retribution on the Little League field.
Oh, absolutely. He's going to get even. He's not used to this. Well, anyway, the baseball season rolls around, and Alex is getting his team ready. to play in the big in the game. And in Pineville, Pennsylvania, every 4th of July is when the playoff games are. And so this 4th of July is approaching, and they have played the Creeks, who is the team that Mr. Bemis sponsors, as opposed to the Cherokees, who Alex sponsors. So the Cherokees have only lost one game this year, and that is to the Creeks. And so they're in the playoffs against the Creeks. Well, Conrad Bemis, he's not going to let Alex win the trophy. He goes out and he recruits these kids that are older than the league really allows. But because he's on the school board, he's on the town council, and everything else, he doesn't let the records of these kids get out. So nobody can really check on what their ages are. The only people who he's allowing is the police department or the parents. So consequently, on game day, there's a big hullabaloo. People are at Ritchie Field, which is named after one of the men who became a Major League Baseball player. But he started out in the little leagues in Pineville and Bucks County. So they named the field Ritchie Field. And all the people on this day, they're waiting for the game to start. Well, you know, Conrad Bemis, being like he is, has already laid some of the foundations of what he's going to pull.
He's devious.
Yes. And what he has done is he knows Alex, and he knows Alex's love is Candy Hollis. So what he does, when she's at lunch one day, he inadvertently joins himself at the same table and asks her, can he sit down? There's no other room anyplace else. And she's a little uncomfortable with this, but he's a big bank customer. So she says yes. And he sits down. And while they're talking, he offers her a salary that is considerably more than the salary she's making at the bank. And he lures her over to his business, the Bemis Industries, the bag company, and gives her a salary of more than $100 a week, more than she's making at the bank. Well, she's a small town girl. She comes from a very poor background, and $100 a week raise to her is a lot of money.
Yes.
So she accepts. She accepts his offer. And when she tells Alex, he's kind of upset about it, but, you know, it's her life. And he kind of intimates that, you know, Bemis Industries is in a little bit of trouble because they're in debt. And she says, oh, no. She says, he doesn't have any debt. He paid off his debt. And Alex says, yeah, that's true. And I hate to break his confidence and talk about business that way, I shouldn't be. But he said he still owes the bank. Now he owes the bank $7 million. And, you know, and so he's still essentially in debt. Candy says, oh, I don't think so. I think he's smart enough to work his way out of it. And she goes to work for him. And so what Conrad Bemis does is he fixes it so that when he throws his lavish parties, he doesn't invite Alex. And so because Candy's his personal secretary now, he demands that she attend all of the functions of the company.
Yeah, see, I said he was devious.
Oh, yeah, he really is this guy, you know. So what happens, she goes to the Christmas party alone. Alex isn't there. She has a great time. She gets a few drinks. She's dancing. She's having a great time. And poor Alex, he's sitting at home alone. He's nobody to go to. The town is very small. It has a tavern. It has a general store that also serves as the post office. And Mr. Miller, the postmaster, that's what he does. But he's closed on Christmas. And the tavern, run by Mr. Ford, who is also happens to be the town's fire chief, he's closed on Christmas. So Alex really doesn't have any place to go. So he says spends Christmas Eve at home. And the next morning, he calls Candy to find out how she liked the presents that he gave him. And she's not at home. She doesn't answer her phone. Well, finally, in the afternoon, she calls him. She said, oh, I had such a great time at the party. She said, I had a little too much to drink, so I spent the night over at the Bemis home. And she said, and the next morning I got up. She said, I had breakfast served to me. She said, it was the first time in my life. We had the breakfast out on the patio. The servant came out and asked me what I wanted for breakfast, and it was just wonderful. So, well, you know. And she said, oh, by the way, thanks for the alligator boots and the candy. You sent me. I really like them. So Alex is kind of disappointed, you know, and he feels like already she's being pulled away from him,
yep.
Which is Conrad Bemis wants.
Yes.
New Year's party comes, same thing. They got a big New Year's party going on at the Bemis house. It's a mansion. And Candy has to go without Alex. So Alex spends New Year's Eve alone by himself again. Everything's closed in the little town. Well, finally the big day comes. And after a while, Candy's starting to get the idea that Conrad Bemis doesn't like Alex for whatever reason. And she's starting to realize that he's kind of a bully and he threatens people. But now she's quit the bank. They hired somebody in her place. So she's got to stay here with Conrad. If she doesn't, she's going to have to get a job in downtown Philadelphia, drive all the way to Doylestown, the county seat, every day to catch the train, go all the way into Philadelphia, which is like a 40-minute ride.
Right.
And she doesn't want to have to do that, and she certainly doesn't want to drive every day. But she's doing well with the money Conrad gave her. She's bought a new Ford convertible, one of the new Mustangs that came out. And she deposits the funds as the personal secretary. She deposits the company's funds in the bank every day. Well, unfortunately, Alex and Candy are kind of drifting apart. And one day she comes into the bank to make a deposit. And she doesn't even stop in Alex's office to say hello. She goes out. She gets in her new convertible and she takes off. And Alex is looking out the window and he's really kind of brokenhearted. He knows that they're drifting apart and that Conrad Bemis is doing it. But, you know, he's a kind of a laid-back guy. He does what he can. He continues to do his job, continues to coach the team. And lo and behold, it was this house he wanted to buy when him and Candy got married. It was kind of a starter home with two bedrooms. It needed painting. There were other things that needed straightened out. And so he takes a ride after New Year's, and he goes down to this old house, and he's, you know, kind of lovesick and so he looks at the house that he had looked at before, and he sees that the house has been repainted, the shutters have been painted, everything is looking really spiffy. So and the for sale sign is gone. So Alex is sitting there in the car, and he notices this kid sitting on the porch, and the kid's got a brand new baseball glove. He's flipping the ball up in the air and he's catching it. And for some reason, Alex doesn't know, the door to his car pops open and he gets out and walks right across the street without looking either way. Doesn't have to for whatever reason. And he strikes up a conversation with the kid. And as he's talking to the kid, you know, he's found the kid's a baseball player and he's talking to the kid. And all of a sudden he said, "My name is Timmy, you know, and I love baseball." And the door opens and out comes his mother. Well, Alex looks at his mother and he's kind of mesmerized because there's something about this woman that just fascinates him and kind of mesmerizes him. And she said, "This is my son, Timmy, and Timmy's a baseball player." And she said, and Alex says to her, "You know, I was going to buy this house." He said, but my engagement fell through. And he said, "I was going to fix it up." She said, "Oh, well," she said, "would you like to come in and see what we've done with the house on the inside?" And Alex says, "Sure." And he goes in and he's flabbergasted because everything on the inside of the house is exactly like he was going to do it when him and Candy were going to get married. So he's kind of puzzled by it all. They've added a bathroom on the second floor. The carpets are the same coloring. There's a new refrigerator, new sink, new microwave above the new range. And so Alex is just absolutely flabbergasted. And so as he's walking out the door and thanking him for letting him see the house, he finds out the lady's name is Maria. And she says to him, Alex says, "You know, I have a baseball team that I'm coaching. If you'd like to play in my team," he said, "you're certainly welcome." And she says, "Sure, we'd love to play on your team." And so they get together and they go to practices. And Timmy's a pretty good pitcher, but not great. Well, the day before the big game comes now on the 4th of July in Pineville, Alex gets a phone call. And it's from his pitcher's mother, Mrs. Ortega. And her son was playing soccer in the backyard, and he fell and he broke his arm. And he's going to be in the cast for like 3 months. And there's Alex. He doesn't have another pitcher. The only kid he knows is this new kid, Timmy, who pitches. And, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to do. The kid's only 9 years old. There's six innings of play in Little League baseball. And no 9-year-old kid could pitch for six innings. He's only a small kid. And he's small for his age. So Alex is sitting there. He doesn't know what he's going to do. And all of a sudden, the phone rings. And he doesn't want to answer it. He's not feeling great. He's sitting there thinking, what am I going to do? You know, if I don't have a pitcher, I'm going to have to forfeit the game. And he feels sorry for because the kids on his team tried out so hard. They worked so hard. They loved the team. They loved playing baseball. And he knows if he forfeits the game, that they're going to be extremely disappointed. So he decides he's going to play the game anyway, but he doesn't know who's going to pitch. He's got to put this little kid in there and let him do the best he can. Well, the phone's still ringing, and Alex doesn't want to answer it, but it keeps on ringing, even though he's got a limited number of rings to the answering machine. It's still ringing. And as he's going over for the phone, he got the strangest feeling that he knows who's on the other end of the line, and he picks it up. Lo and behold, it's Maria. And she says to him, stop fretting about the pitcher. He's going to be okay. It's just a simple fracture. She said, my son will pitch for you. And Alex says, well, he's only 9 years old. He said, I don't think he pitched six innings. And Maria says to him, my son can pitch a lot more than six innings, she says, when he has to. But he only does things like that when he has to do them. And so she says, so my son will be pitching in the game tomorrow. And she hangs up. And Alex is so mesmerized by all this, he's got the phone to his ear, and all of a sudden he's got dial tone back. And he sits down, and he falls asleep. He gets up the next morning, the sun's shining bright, and it's a beautiful day. It's going to be a wonderful holiday. And he gets to the park, and lo and behold, this little kid is going to pitch for him. Timmy is not there, and his mother's not there. He doesn't see him among the crowd. He sees all of the other baseball players that are going to play against him and the other regular members of his team, but this kid and his mom isn't there. So he's getting kind of worried, of course. You know, he's looking at his watch. It's getting time for the game to start. People have got their braziers going. They're drinking beer. They've got their red, white, and blue uniforms on and hats. It's the 4th of July, and it's the big game. And he's getting worried, and suddenly he looks around, and all of a sudden there is Timmy and his mother. Now, He can see the parking lot from where he is. He didn't see any car pull in, but how did they get there? And he kind of thought about it for a minute, but of course, it's the big day. And all of a sudden, everybody starts heading for the ballpark. And he looks at his watch. Yep, it's time to start the game. They get into the ballpark. Everybody's in the seats in there. And all the people from Bemis Industries are there cheering for, of course, for the Creeks. They have to. Because if they don't, they're going to incur the wrath of Mr. Bemis, and he gets his own way. And on the other side are some of the people who don't work for Bemis Bags, who used to, or who work in downtown Philadelphia and never worked for them. And they're going to cheer for the Cherokees. And lo and behold, Alex looks over, and there's Mr. Bemis sitting down. And he's got a big cigar, black cigar in his mouth. And on one side of him is sitting his wife. On the other side is Candy Hollis sitting next to him. And he sees Alex looking over at him. He takes his arm, and he puts it around Candy. Just to Alex.
Yep.
And Alex is a little taken back, but he sees that Candy's not comfortable with this. She's not the kind of a girl that lets anybody put their arm around her. And so she kind of pushes him away, and you know, but it doesn't mean anything to Alex at this point. But Candy's caught and wise to him. As his personal secretary, she realized, like some of the invoices that come across her desk, that the company is indeed in deep debt, just like Alex told her it was. But she can't leave. There's no job at the bank left for her, and she doesn't want to travel to Philadelphia. She's got to go along with this ego's antics and play along with him for a while. Well, the pitcher for the Cherokees walks out onto the field. They're in the field first. And Bemis looks across at the pitcher, and he's a little kid. He's got his hat on sideways, and the peak's not even over his face. He looks like he's a midget. And he yells out, hey, Alex, where did you get that midget? And, of course, everybody on the rooting for the Creeks laughs, and they're all howling with laughter, you know. And Bemis is smiling, puffing on his cigar. And Candy's not laughing, you know. She doesn't think it's funny at all. Well, they start pitching, and the kid's not doing that great. I mean, he's throwing the ball, but it's not doing what it's great. And, of course, Bemis is back there beaming and happy, you know, and he really got this guy now. He took his girlfriend away from him, and now he's going to lose the crown for the team. Well, the game starts, and they're not doing that well at all. And they're coming up on the sixth inning here, and the score is 6-0 in favor of the Creeks. And all these big kids got up there, and they swatted home runs, you know, and the Cherokees were running after the ball, but they're just mismatched. So Conrad Bemis, you know, he thinks it's really, really great. And he's very, very happy about the thing. And then all of a sudden, he makes a remark that rubs Timmy the wrong way. And Timmy takes his hat and he puts it over his eyes. And now the peak's over his eyes. Now they're going to start to play baseball. So Conrad Bemis, sitting there watching this, still smirking. And all of a sudden, this little midget that he called the kid, he called midget, his pitching is starting to improve. And some of his best players that he's got up, he pays these kids, by the way, to play the games. And if we win the championship, I'll give you each like 30 or 40 bucks. So these kids are saying, hey, you know, 14, 15 years old.
It's a lot of money.
But, you know, 40 bucks is a lot of money.
Yep.
So the first big kid gets up. He's called Brute Harrington. He's the pitcher. He gets up, and in the early innings, he had hit a towering home run way out of the park. And now he's up again. And now Timmy throws the ball to him, and he swings at it, and he misses. Strike. However, the umpire, McTish, works for Conrad Bemis, and he calls it a ball.
Okay.
And the people are looking like, you, that's not a ball, that's a strike. That, no, it's the umpire's rules the game. It's a ball. So Timmy looks at him and, you know, said, all right. Rosendy pitches the ball, and this kid swings again and misses. No, he can't do it twice in a row. It's a strike.
Yes.
This starts to happen throughout the game. Conrad's people are making big mistakes. And what's happening is crazy. For example, when this Brute Harrington hits the ball, it goes into the center field. And as it goes to center field, Wendy jumps up at shortstop and grabs the ball, and he's out. And, you know, and Conrad is looking around, and, you know, and it's quite a quiet in the benches now. Another kid gets up. He whacks the ball. It rolls down to the field. Kid catches it, pays him. He's out. So the umpire on first base also works for Bemis back.
Of course.
And he says, as the kid runs towards the base, he says that the kid beat the ball to the base, and he was out by a mile, but the umpire calls him safe. Now he's ticking off the pitcher. And the pitcher turns around and looks at him, and he kind of smirks. All of a sudden, the first base umpire jumps up in the air, and he screams, and he runs. He runs towards the men's room. He runs into the men's room. And everybody's wondering, what's wrong? Is he having a heart attack? Is he sick? So the chief of the fire department, Mr. Ford, sends one of his paramedics over to see if he's okay in the men's room. Well, the paramedic goes in. He comes right out again. And he has somebody crank up the engine and turn the hoses on. They go in. What has happened is the first base umpire had a horrible case of diarrhea, the worst case they've ever seen. Went to the men's room with the hose everything down. And out comes the first base umpire. He's got a blanket around him now, and he wants to get the heck out of there. He doesn't want to stay there. He's embarrassed. And he starts to walk towards his car, but for some reason, his feet won't listen to him. They've taken him back over to the bench, and he's sitting down next to Mr. Bemis and his wife. But he doesn't want to be there. Simple. Well, anyway.
It's a great picture. I just want to mention the book we're talking about, if you're just joining us, The Day God Played Baseball. John Henry Hardy is the author. Our guest, his website is jhhardy.com. John, a few minutes left in the program. I'm excited to see what happens because Timmy sort of kicked it into another gear now, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. And not only that, but he's kind of mesmerized Alex Straczynski so he can't say nothing. And because he tells him, I'm coaching the game now. So the Cherokees are up. The littlest girl on the team, she gets up. She hasn't had a real hit all season. She's real tiny, small, big bat. Everybody's watching for her. Everybody's hoping that she'll get a hit or something like that. And they throw the first ball, strike one. Well, you know, they said that same old thing is going to happen, you know. Strike two. And then on the third strike, she hits the ball. And she hits it right to the shortstop, and she starts running toward first base. Well, the shortstop went to grab the ball, and as he went to grab it, the ball ran up his arm. around to the back of his neck, and it stayed there. And he's looking around the field. Where's the ball at? And then all of a sudden, he feels it running down his arm. And it drops on the ground. He picks it up, and he throws it toward first base. But unfortunately, the littlest girl on the team puts her foot on the base a second before, and she's called safe because now the first base umpire, he's sitting on the bleachers with a blanket around him, embarrassed because of his diarrhea. And they've got a new person on base, and it's one of Alex Sardinsky's people. He calls it safe, and Ponman, Bemis, is furious. And he makes some kind of a comment. He goes out, and he wants to say something to the pitcher and to the people that this kid wasn't safe. And when he drops his cigar, he bends over to pick it up. And when he does, he rips out the seat of his pants, and everybody can see his skivvies. And everybody is laughing, even the people on the team. Well, anyway, toward the end of the game, since we're running out of time, toward the end of the game, the score is now 4-6 because Wendy, who is their league hitter, hit an inside the park home run, and nobody knows how it happened. But she hit the ball, and the kid that ran after the ball touched it with his foot, and it kicked the ball out further. Well, when he went to run after the ball starts going faster and faster and faster, and he can't catch the ball. In the meantime, Wendy is circling the bases along with the other players on base, and it's now 4-6. Well, Michelle gets up. She's the power hitter for the Cherokees, and this brute Harrington's kind of afraid of her because she hit a home run off him in the earlier game that they had. Well, the count gets up to 3-2, and it's a legitimate count because the umpire, who was on the umpire base, had made a kind of remark and was cheating like heck. And so what the pitcher did, he threw a terrifically fast ball, hit him right in the mass, and it came through the mass, right between the wire protectors, and it lodged against his nose. And they can't get the mask off. He's screaming. And so finally, the pitcher figured he had enough, and he took it off, and they took the guy out of the game because his nose hurt. It was big and red. And everybody said, hey, it looks like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and he's embarrassed, you know, and Mr. Bemis is laughing. Well, anyway, they got Judge Bevins on base, the guy that's the town judge, and he's not going to be a cheater. Michelle gets up there. The count is 3-2, and Brute Harrington reels back, and he throws her his fastest four-seamer that he can, and he pitches the ball, and bam, over there, hear a big sound, and a ball goes flying out off of the field. It goes way high in the air, but it looks like it's going to be an inside fly, and the kid's going to catch it. The kid named London is standing under the ball, and he's watching the ball come down. It looks like a little dot to him. He said, Jesus, the sun is blinding me. And then all of a sudden, the ball looks like it's the size of a ball. And then all of a sudden, it's just this humongous thing with a fiery tail on it, and he thinks it's a meteor. And he goes running, and he runs into the fence. When he does, the ball hits him on the head and bounces over. And so, you know, it's the end of the game. That is actually a ground rule double. But what Michelle did when she hit the ball, the ball actually kept on going. It went so far, nobody knew where it went. So two records were set on by the Cherokees that day. Wendy Thomas hit an inside the park home run, and Michelle hit the ball, the longest home run ball in the park. Well, Conrad Bemis, you know, he's lost the crown. He's really upset. He goes back to his car. He hops there on one foot because he's hurt his foot. He dropped the trophy on it deliberately when Alex was going to grab the trophy. He dropped it on his foot and right on his bad toe, and he hops out of the park all the way to his car. He gets in. You know, he's lost the crown. His company's going broke. He doesn't know what to do. So all of a sudden, this voice says to him, why don't you sell the yacht? And he looks over, and here's this woman, Maria. He knows she's the pitcher's mother. And he looks at her, and he doesn't know what to think about, something about her. And she said, if you sell the yacht, you'll be able to pay off all of your debts. Because he's thinking about committing suicide. He wants to ride down Big Oak Road and hit a tree that's right to dead center on a 90-degree turn. And he thinks that if I hit the tree, people won't know if it was suicide or whether I just had an accident. So she said to him, sell the yacht, pay off your debts, and you got to start being playing like a fair. You got to start being a fair man and stop being a bully. Excuse me. So that's what happens. Conrad sells the yacht. He gets his debts paid off, and he pays the bank off, and now he can get another loan. And he does, and he installs a couple of the new paper bag machines and the ones that make the nylon bags. And so he doesn't have to lay anybody off. And, you know, the episode changed his whole life. And he became a better man. He began to think of his workers as his people. He resigned from the town council, the baseball team, and all the baseball commission. And he's a much better man. And he makes friends with Alex Straczynski. And finally, when Alex is going to marry Candy, who came back to him, the house went back on the market. He bought it, and they're going to fix it up. Although Alex is understandably puzzled by when he went into that house before with Maria, it was all like new. Now the house is back the way it was before. And he knows something's different, but he doesn't know what. But anyway, at the wedding, Conrad Bemis comes up to him and congratulates him again on winning the trophy. And he says to him, very strangely, he says, you know, we both love baseball, Alex. He said, do you think if the Son of God came down on earth right now and was one of the agents of these kids here on the team, do you think he'd love baseball like we do? Excuse me. And Alex says to him, oh, I'm sure that he would, and I'm sure that he would play the game fairly. If his team was better than there was another team better than his team, he would let them win based on the idea that it was the fair thing to do. And Conrad and Alex said, I got the idea that next year you and I are going to play it against each other, and it's going to be another one of those games that it was this past season. And Conrad looks at him and says, no, Alex. He said, that game was the craziest game people ever saw. And they said, the way it was played and the way the baseball acted and the way the pitcher acted, it was like a miracle. And the people are saying it was the day that God played baseball. That's the only way that they won. And that's basically how the story ends.
And it's such
there's a lot of other chicanery in the story that's just we don't have the time to talk about.
Well, yeah, it's funny.
Rather funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. There are lessons in there. It's an entertaining story. On top of all of that, and a great conclusion to the story, the book is The Day God Played Baseball. John Henry Hardy is the author. His website is jhhardy.com. You can get all the information there. Book available wherever books are sold. And, of course, you can link on directly to John's website by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. John, an amazing storyteller. This is a fascinating read, different than your other books, and very entertaining. It's humorous as you're reading. I don't know where you come up with all these different, everything happens, and it's a very mysterious way that it happens that you bring out in the book, The Day God Played Baseball. Thank you, sir, for being with us on the program. Fun as always. Thank you.
Rick, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great pleasure. And I hope to be seeing you again soon.
We definitely will do that because you keep the books coming. We'll keep the shows coming. So we'll have John back on the program. This book, The Day God Played Baseball, John Henry Hardy. His website, jhhardy.com. Of course, link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're right back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.